Hello, and welcome to the 90s Kids Movie Pod. We are your hosts, Joe.
Hello.
Stephanie.
Hello.
And I'm Max. We are three millennials who took A-level media studies, so you know we are highly qualified to talk about films. This is the podcast for children of the 90s. Join us as we rewatch the films that shaped our childhood. Good to see you again, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
So this week is a special one because it's the first animated film that we've looked at, which is, again, I'm still impressed by that after, what, 15, 16 episodes?
I know. So, shocking.
Absolutely shocking, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm really really.
Are you really excited?
I was looking for other words. I was looking for other words for that. I'm thrilled. That's why I am to talk about this film. So, yeah, without further ado, I will pass it on to Steph to introduce the film that we're looking at this week.
Thank you very much, Max. So, the film that we've chosen to rewatch this week is the 1988 Don Bluth movie, The Land Before Time. So, I do hope that you two have managed to sit through the 69 minutes of this movie. You haven't fallen asleep.
I was going to say, there was a reason why you chose this, and I know exactly why. It's the shortest film we've ever done.
It's only slightly longer than most TV episodes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was quite an easy one to sit through and watch. But to give you, or to give our listeners, a bit of information about this movie. So, The Land Before Time is an American children's franchise of animated adventure films by Universal Pictures, and it centres on dinosaurs. So the series of movies begins with the one that we watched, which came out in 1988, and it was directed and produced by Don Bluth, who, for those of you that don't know, Don Bluth was one of the chief animators at Disney, but he left to form his own independent animation firm, and he created films such as The Secret of Nim and An American Tale, if anyone has seen those movies. The Land Before Time was executive produced by George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, and it was followed by 13 direct-to-video musical sequels. So who would have thought this film would spawn 13 other movies, all of which, yeah, were musical. This film didn't have any musical numbers in it. Not sure whether that's a good or a bad thing. It also spawned a TV series, video games, soundtracks, and lots of related merchandising. But none of the sequels or the series actually involved the participation of Don Bluth, George Lucas, or Steven Spielberg. This was the only one. So, with all that being said, shall I do a little plot summary of this movie?
I don't think it will take long, but absolutely go for it.
So, during the age of the dinosaurs, a massive famine forces several herds of dinosaurs to seek an oasis known as the Great Valley. Among these are a small herd of long necks, or, I'm going to try this, apatosauruses. Apparently, that is what they are called, not long necks. And at the beginning of the film, the mother in the herd gives birth to a single baby named Littlefoot. And Littlefoot is tragically orphaned when his mother is killed by a vicious Tyrannosaurus Rex, which the dinosaurs all just call a sharp tooth. And to make matters worse, Littlefoot is separated from his grandparents by an earthquake, so he has to make the journey to the Great Valley all on his own. And on his journey, he meets Sarah, the three-horn, Ducky, the big mouth, Petrie the Flyer, and Spike the Spike Tail, all of which are little dinosaurs, all of which have been also separated from their parents. It's quite tragic. And the film explores issues of prejudice between different species and the hardships that they endure on their journey as they are guided by the spirit of Littlefoot's mother, and they're forced to deal with the dreaded sharp tooth. But spoiler alert, they do make it to the Great Valley in the end, and all is well. But yeah, quite a bit happens in those 69 minutes, so let's get into it. So I'd like to know, is this the first time you guys have seen this film, or have you watched this movie before?
So I've seen this film many, 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 many times, to the point where when I watched it this time, I was expecting, like, I heard lines and I knew what the next line was going to be.
Really?
So I've definitely watched this, 100%. And there were so many lines that were said that I knew exactly how they were executed, if that makes sense. So I must have watched this film 100 times, because I distinctively remember this is like some of the earliest memories I have of being a child, like very early primary school, when we had like 5 videotapes, and this was definitely one of them. So yeah, I love this film. It's when you recommended it last week, I truly, truly, truly was excited, because I thought I honestly haven't seen this in very, very long time. So first things first, I was shocked at how short it was, because I did think, oh my gosh, yeah, it must be like an hour and a half, an hour and 20 minutes. I didn't realize so much happens in about 60 minutes. But it makes sense, because it's a kid's film, I guess, at the end of the day. But at the same time, yeah, I think that did shock me. Yeah, I think what really stayed with me as a child up to now really is the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll speak about it later, but James Horner, the late James Horner, is like one of my favorite film composers, period.
Yeah.
So he just makes these really magical themes that just really, really stay with you. I mean, most people that are listening to this will probably have heard of James Horner, so there's no need to go into the films that he's scored, but the soundtrack and everything to do with this film I absolutely loved. So yeah. But I think, if I'm right, that Joe hadn't watched this film before.
Yeah, I don't know how, because it's like a staple of so many people's childhoods. I had not seen this before.
Really?
So I was watching this for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah. I fucking hated it. I hated every second of this fucking awful film.
Did you really?
Oh my God. You think I'm joking? I hated this film. It was, and it got worse and worse and worse.
Oh my God.
I'm listening to you guys talk so nostalgically about it, and I'm like, you must have watched a different film. I must have watched like number 13 or something. I mean, I didn't. I watched the original. And when he was saying, oh, you know, so much happens in, you know, like 60 minutes. Did it? I've got a different plot summary, which is basically the dinosaurs are separated. And they go, oh, we'll go over there, we'll be all right. And they do, and nothing happens.
They have to encounter the sharp
The only
tooth.
Thing that would have made this film better is if they all got wiped out by a comet. Because it makes no sense. I love how it just says it's set at the age of the dinosaurs. Like there's an age of dinosaurs. Like all these different kind of dinosaurs would coexist when they were spread out millions, millions of years apart.
That's what happened.
No, it isn't. Some of these dinosaurs, right, some of the dinosaurs in this film, we are more closely related to them in terms of years than the other dinosaurs in this film.
You do realise dinosaurs also don't talk. So, you know, you do have to suspend some of your disbelief for this movie.
I beg to differ. I heard a lot of dinosaurs talk throughout this fucking film. And let me tell you, they talk too much. Oh, my God. Okay. I know they're child actors, but honestly, this was like pulling teeth watching this film.
Oh.
And then you think, it's only going to get better. And then one more character comes along that was just like, can't you die? Hated it.
Oh, my
Absolutely
God.
Hated it. The lack of music, obviously James Horner is the one good thing I'd say about this film. Like I do like his music, but it's hard listening to it with, you know, this film in the background and stuff. But like, I was thinking, yeah, maybe some musical numbers would have cheered this film up, because honestly, like, I just really hated this film.
Okay. Tell us how you really feel.
I think maybe it's like I'm not looking at, maybe I'm not. I obviously didn't watch it with my nostalgic hat on. I was watching it with, you know, 21st century hat on and stuff. And I know that, you know, films have aged and stuff. But did you not think the characters in this film were really annoying? Or is it just me?
Yeah.
No, because so we watched this as children, and that didn't really occur to me. Like, if I was to, but this is why it's interesting, you know. So you watched this for the first time as an adult, and it's,
yes,
you know, as an 30 adult.
30 years of age, yeah.
30 years of age, like it would be really annoying. But it's like, I've rewatched episodes, just this is a random example. So I've rewatched episodes of Dexter's Lab I couldn't get past the first 10 minutes because I thought, this is so annoying.
Aren't the episodes only 10 minutes long?
Well, no, I think they're...
Yeah, you might get through some of them, Steph.
No, but I mean, I was just like, oh my God, everyone's voice is so high-pitched. I don't understand it. Everyone's talking really fast. Mm. And maybe it wasn't as good as I remember. But as a child, no, I really liked all the characters in this film. I did.
See, the thing is, all of the dinosaurs, the little dinosaurs, are voiced by child actors. And I think all of the dinosaurs act like actual little children. Like, they're very... Some of them are very petulant. Some of them are really whiny. And they just act like kids. And I think maybe when you're watching...
I think that's what I hated.
Yeah, which I can appreciate. Because I think when you're watching it as a child, you relate to it as a child. So you're like, oh, well, they're acting how, like, my friends would act or how I would act.
Absolutely.
And watching it back, I felt like that was really obvious. Like, they really... The way that, like, Littlefoot sort of... storms ahead from the group when things aren't going his way, and the way that Sarah, the three-horn triceratops, the way that she acts in this film, she is just an annoying little kid. So yeah, watching it as an adult, it is a little bit grating, but yeah, I think I have just such strong memories of watching this when I was little, and especially the bit where... So in the film, Littlefoot's mother gets killed by a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and oh my God, it still made me cry this time. Literally, I knew it was coming and I can't handle it. Everything that those scenes combined with James Horner's music, it just got me. I was like, I can't handle it. And when I was little, my mum would refuse to let me watch this film because I would cry. She would literally be like,
really?
You are not watching this if you're going to cry. So I have to hold it in. So maybe all those times I watched it, tried to hold in those tears, they came out now because, yeah, it set me off.
I also felt like crying, but for very different reasons throughout this film.
Yeah, no, look, Steph, I'm with you. I feel like this is going to be very much a us versus Joe scenario here, but I would very much
bring
you,
it
again,
on.
But again, it's because I have such strong memories of watching this as a child. But I remember that scene where Littlefoot's mother dies. How many other animated movies did you watch where there was that emotional punch in the gut that was
so
like
many,
advertised? But there was like advertised to kids on that grand scale. Like, okay, so which ones would you say, Joe?
Mufasa.
Lion King, Bambi. There's quite a few Disney ones that are very traumatic, and so. Like,
no, but this is my point. This came out in 1988, so this was one of first film. Sorry, go on.
No, definitely. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, yeah, it was a few years ahead, but for me, because understandably, it's the first time I've watched it, I'm making those correlations in my head and thinking, oh, this is a lot like Lion King. Nowhere fucking near as good, though. I'd rather be watching Lion King, is what I continuously thought throughout this film.
See, like, yeah, whereas me and Steph, we watched that that Mufasa Lion King scene.
Probably watched it before, yeah.
Yeah, and we watched that and we were like, this is nothing. We've seen Littlefoot's mother die.
I mean,
I think...
The amount of parents that get killed off in kids' movies, it shouldn't be allowed really, though, should it? Because it's traumatising.
It does happen a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like the writers of these movies think, okay, how can we make kids cry? What is the one thing that would make a kid cry? Let's kill off the mother.
It's just like, it's so harsh.
Yeah, it is harsh. I think it
Why
is.
Don't the viewers write in and tell us their favourite killing scenes of their parents?
It's awful.
Please comment on Twitter and Instagram.
No, but I see what you're saying. But I think for me, this was, again, because I was born in 1990, this was one of the very first videos we really watched. If I'm going through the recesses of my mind, the very, very earliest movies I watched as a kid were pretty much all Don Bluth films. And this one was like a massive, emotional punch in the gut.
Mm.
And I text my sister before I watched it, and she was like, oh, I don't watch that movie ever again because I'll just cry.
Yeah, I'm with her, yeah.
Who would have thought the most polarizing film that we'd watched so far would be The Land Before Time?
Yeah, the first animated film. I think that's it, though. I think this film, it seems to online have such like a loyal fan base of people that were like, oh, you know, like, and I think I'm just out of the loop. I think I'm just a grumpy old man that didn't get to experience it at the time when it was, you know, the target audience is probably, you know, a four-year-old and not you know, nearly a 34-year-old, to be fair. So probably makes sense, doesn't it?
IMDb rating, it's got a 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb, and the overall rating on Rotten Tomatoes from critics is 70%. So it did, you know, a lot of people do really like this film. But I think, I mean, yeah, maybe for 88, when this film first came out, and we hadn't had films like The Lion King and things like that before. And so people just loved it. And I think anyone that watched it when they were little and rewatched it now, because you've got such a nostalgic view of it, you are going to enjoy it again. But yeah, maybe in 2021, it's just not for a new viewership.
Yeah.
I think as well, we were spoiled by the Disney's like Renaissance era, where like all the animated films that were coming out when we were kids were
so good.
Probably the best animated films that have ever been released ever. And like we you know, I remember Toy Story coming out when I was really young. We rented it from like the video shop, and it's like we grew up with these things. I'm not saying that The Land Before Time, had I watched it at the time, is any less of a. Do you know what I mean though? Like we were kind of spoiled as children.
Yeah,
like maybe.
But I will say though, I was watching this film at the same time as also watching Toy Story and Lion King.
Yes.
And and for me, I was still like, yeah, let's whack on The Land Before Time if my mum's going to let me watch it.
And does she let you watch it now that you're married?
I did have to text her and ask permission. Just give you the heads up, mum. My ear's going to make me cry.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Joe, but I think that's it. If I'd never watched this film before, that's why I'm trying to like see your side of the argument too, but I can totally understand. Like, if I'd never seen this before, but had grown up with all the Disney Renaissance movies and everything like that, would I think this is okay? Like, would I, as an adult, think that Littlefoot scene was that emotional? Maybe not, but I like Steph was saying, that I think I have such vivid memories of watching this movie. Mm. And clearly, I didn't realize how much I'd watched it until, like I said, there were certain scenes when I thought, I know exactly what he's going to say next. Or like, they were just, you know, and yeah, I think that's probably why. There's an emotional connection. But in terms of like the word we use like quite often on this podcast, in terms of nostalgia, gosh, that James Horner theme, as well as like the ending song, oh God, just waves of nostalgia pouring over me. I just remember the street I grew up in bloody Isleworth in Hounslow. I remember it distinctively, what was going on in like 4 or 5 year old Max's life at that time. And it all came from like the sounds and the characters in that film. So I think very much I'm viewing it through like rose tinted glasses. I'm not saying it's the best animated movie ever. I do think Don Bluth is a fantastic filmmaker, though. And it goes without saying, obviously, like American Tail, All Dogs Go to Heaven, actually one of my favorite films proper. So, yeah, he could do no wrong, really, in the 90s for me. Like, anything he brought out, I was like, yep, go and see it. Yep, I'd love to see it. So,
yeah. I think, it's interesting when you watch Don Bluth movies versus Disney movies. And you can tell, obviously, he worked for Disney for many, many years. And that the style is similar, but there's subtle differences.
There is. Like, I've seen American Tail like countless times, and I was like, oh, this the animation style is so similar. And I was trying to think, but it to me, these films feel a bit darker than some of the Disney ones.
Yeah,
like in just the way, even the way the characters move, I can't quite describe it. There's probably people on YouTube that have done like essays about the different animation styles and stuff, but you know it when you see it, but it's almost, I don't know, the American Tail was a scary film as a kid, like a really young kid in some ways, and this, I don't know, there's some bits in this I can imagine with the T-Rex and stuff that would be like almost traumatizing to younger children and stuff, so
yeah,
I don't know, it just feels quite dark to me.
I think a lot of Don Bluth movies do have that darker edge to them. And I don't know whether, yeah, that is through maybe the style of the animation or whether it is just through the storyline as well, because I think the stories are slightly darker, or just a bit more intense and a bit more real. Like, like obviously American Tale is all about like immigration and like Jewish immigrants and things. And and then in this film, it's kind of, you're watching dinosaurs that, you know, eventually are going to become extinct. And it's a little bit weird to watch it. You're like, oh, these cute little characters. Oh, they're going to get hit by a meteor sometime soon. And it feels a little bit, I don't know. It felt a bit
pointless
watching it. Yeah, pointless. So, yeah, they've done this whole journey to the Great Valley and they've got there, but they're soon going to be wiped out. It's... yeah, a bit depressing when you analyse it.
Aren't we all, Doug? Aren't we all?
So, yeah, I mean, like, do you guys have any... Oh, Max, I guess you've already said All Dogs Go to Heaven, but any other Don Bluth movies that you especially are fond of?
Yeah, so, yeah, for me, it would be All Dogs... Go to Heaven would be the number one on the list, I think, just because my sister, as I've mentioned before, very much governed my decisions as to what we watched, because she was my older sister and she always wanted a dog, and that was as close as we ever got to having a dog. All Dogs Go to Heaven. I think Anastasia is honestly incredible animated film. I really, really liked it. And the only thing that I have to say about like Don Bluth films and what they were trying to do is, so the Disney Renaissance really was from like Little Mermaid onwards. I know that Snow White was really popular, but if you think about the type of movies they were making, so like The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Pocahontas, like they weren't really making like original stories, but they were retelling stories that had been made, apart from The Lion King, obviously. But I think maybe with like...
It's a retelling of Hamlet.
Yeah.
With lions.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, it's Hamlet with lions, isn't it? Yeah.
Wow. I didn't actually know. I've never seen Hamlet, to be fair. So yeah, that's interesting. I think maybe with Don Bluth films, it was like an original movie, unless Lamb for Time is like another Shakespeare rip-off, I'm not really sure.
It's actually based on A Midsummer Night's Dream.
I think Shakespeare is rolling in his grave.
How dare you, sir?
But maybe that's why, because I do know that this film did quite well at the box office. And like Steph said, the critics actually thought it was a really good film. Kids, obviously, like not for adults. But like, I think... I'm just trying to work out like why it did so well, but I guess...
Yeah, this film was the highest grossing animated film of all time until The Little Mermaid, which only came out a year later. But for 1988, this was the highest grossing animated movie ever, which, it's crazy, really, when you think of the other films that came before it, because obviously, there's, you know, Disney's been around for decades. Yeah, I mean, Joe, I don't know what you're talking about. People love these dinosaurs, you know.
Hey, I'm not saying... I am in no way trying to convince you guys of my point of view. I am happy to accept that I'm wrong and that it's just my personal taste and I didn't like it, and that maybe I don't appreciate it because I should have watched it when I was four. But, yeah, still fucking hated it. Like, I don't know what to say.
So you're not going to say this is the best dinosaur movie of all time?
I don't know. It doesn't even beat the Flintstones. I'm not going to lie to you.
Do you think it was the best animated movie of 1988?
I'm trying to think of any other animated movie in 1988. I don't know what came out around that time. Like, I don't know. I don't know any films that came out around that time, really. I'm off the top of me noggin, but I don't know. Yeah, it probably was. It probably is the greatest, you know, the highest grossing animated film of all time up to that point for a reason, you know.
Yeah,
but
I'm pretty good at picking up on like on body language and stuff, but I would actually say that Joe didn't like the film then.
I think you might have a point, Max.
That's a safe bet. Right, favorite scenes, everyone.
I want to know what Joe's favourite scene is.
The ending.
Yeah.
Was it when Littlefoot's mother got murdered? Was that your favourite scene?
I'm not like, you know, I'm not a sociopath. I don't enjoy the killing of mothers. The establishing, like, first 5 minutes where I didn't know how terrible it was, and those annoying little babies that probably weren't even hatched yet, was good, because it's just, who is the narrator in this film? Because he's got a really nice voice. And that's one of the things I didn't mind so much.
So yeah, Pat Hingle is the narrator, and you will probably like him because he was also in Schumacher's Batman movies. He was Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, he's got a great voice. He's got a great voice, this Gordon.
Oh, brilliant.
So, you know, when you've got the opening, and that you've got, basically you had the combination of just like the animation, the narration, and, you know, the music, and then no characters were speaking yet and no plot was introduced. It was just like, ages ago, and it was like, that's quite nice. I like that. That was all right. Downhill from there, but it was all right then.
So you would have liked the original concept, which was that they weren't going to have any of the dinosaurs speak?
Yeah, I remember thinking, oh, is this going to be like Fantasia?
Yeah, they originally were planning on making it like Fantasia, yeah. But
I would enjoy a film where I just got to, like, I don't know, it, like, watch the animation, listen to the, yeah, I don't know. That would have suited me a bit more, maybe.
So do you think your issue was more the voice, the child voice actors?
The plot and the acting, the voice actors and the plot. Yeah. So just
two quite big things.
You know what I felt like? I felt like the hungover uncle that's been invited to a kid's party, and they're all running around and throwing cake at each other, and you've got to try and make sure that they don't just shit everywhere. That is exactly what I felt like. It made me feel hungover, and I wasn't hungover at the time. That's the only way I could describe it. It was loud. They were loud little voices that were very naggy.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, but I think I'm trying to work out why I didn't find them annoying.
Because you're human.
No, but at the same time, like, it, you know, watching a movie, even if, you know, it's not like traditional movie length, but for 60 minutes it's just a lot of high-pitched kids voice acting. But at the same time, I think it's just because I have such strong memories of this film, such strong memories. So I think
what was your favorite scene, Max? If you had to pick a favorite scene, I am interested in knowing what yours would be.
I think that Sarah, by the way, when I was a kid, I always found it a bit odd that everyone had really odd names, and then there was one called Sarah. But but it turns out that her name is spelled C-E-R-A, as opposed to just Sarah in the traditional form.
Because she's a Triceratops.
Oh, there we go.
Triceratops.
There you go.
Okay. Trying to work out why Petri is called Petri, hoping that's not in any connection to a Petri dish, but yeah, there we go. I thought that Sarah's character was actually the most interesting, and I didn't know why. Like, she wasn't my favorite character as a kid, but I think that, like Steph said earlier, the stubbornness of her character quite early on was, like, established quite well. But at the same time, I think those scenes where she's being super stubborn, but Littlefoot has to be almost a bit more adult than everyone else and just kind of learn how to manage her. As a middle child, I can definitely relate to that. So there's that scene where, like, she's headbutting the leaves and there's no leaves that are going to, like, come down from the tree, and Littlefoot, you know, throws them down and she's like, yeah, see, I did it. And he's like, yeah. And then at that other scene where she's, like, being super stubborn and she's sleeping by herself and freezing, and then she cuddles up with the rest of the guys. I remember those scenes really well. But I remember as a kid thinking, like, really, really being emotionally involved in those scenes and thinking, why is she doing this? Like, why is she like this? At least there's a nice character like Littlefoot and the rest of everyone else to kind of help out. So they're not my favorite scenes. They're just scenes that stay with me, if that makes sense. But yeah. So what would you say yours were, Steph?
I just want to go back to what you were saying about, like, Sarah and, like, how she acts and like, not kind of understanding it as a child. And then watching it now, you're like, she's clearly getting all her prejudice from her parents, because when she starts to play with Littlefoot and then her dad says, three horns don't play with long necks. And then it kind of sets it up for the rest of the movie where she's just like, I'm not listening to you because you're a long neck and I'm a three horn and we're better than you. And that idea of like being really prejudiced against people for no real reason. And then she kind of learns throughout the film that they can all get along and, you know, they're all just as good as each other and they need to help and support each other, I think is nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think watching it as an adult, you can sort of see it's like, it's all the parents' fault that they're setting it up for her. But I think favourite scenes for me, I actually like the scenes where all the little dinosaurs are hatching. I think that that's quite a sweet part of the movie. And they almost act like little puppies. They're like, they give their parents a little lick and as they kind of break out of their shells. And I think that bit's really sweet. The most impactful scene obviously was the scene where Littlefoot's mother is, you know, attacked by the T-Rex. But there's a scene after that where Littlefoot's like coming to terms with the loss of his mother, and he comes across another dinosaur who's actually voiced by the narrator, and the narrator says, it's no one's fault. It's, you know, this is just life, this is just what happens. Which I think is just so poignant. And again, I was like crying at this point watching that. But I think it's really...
was like, no, but she's dead. She's never coming back.
But I think that's really interesting in a kid's movie that, you know, because as a child, you're like, well, it's the T-Rex's fault. Like, it's the sharp tooth's fault. But the sharp tooth's just being a sharp tooth. He's just doing what comes naturally. You know, he's got to eat. He's not got any agency. He's not kind of made into this, like, he is the villain of the film, but he's not kind of got a character, if that makes sense. And so that's quite interesting in a kid's film that, like, even though, you know, you see him as the villain, it is just life. Like, that's just what happens. And especially in the age of the dinosaurs, you know, it's kill or be killed. So.
Yeah. Because he had those kind of glazed over, like, red eyes, didn't he? Mm. It was almost like there was no soul in there. He was just doing almost like a... Reminded me of the Terminator a little bit.
Now, that would have been an interesting twist.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Rips his skin off.
If he'd been voiced by Arnold Schwarzenegger, that might have made it a little more interesting.
Oh, is this the first film that doesn't have Robin Williams, Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Danny DeVito? Is that why I don't like it?
Possibly. Yeah, maybe if the little dinosaurs had all been voiced by great actors, it would have been different. Not that saying that the child actors weren't great. I thought they all did brilliant jobs. And it's really sad. I don't know if anyone knows this bit of trivia. Well, it sounds awful to say it's trivia, but
yeah.
The little girl that does the voice of Ducky, who is the big mouth, she was actually murdered before this film came out.
God.
Murdered by her own father, which...
Flipping out.
I know, really dark.
She was 10. She was 10 years old.
Oh, my God.
And I would argue that she's my favourite of the dinosaurs. She's just... I think she's super cute. And, to know that bit of information is pretty dark when you watch this film. It's really sad.
Yeah.
I know. I was looking at trivia. I came across that as the first point. And I was like, oh, gosh.
These podcasts always take a dark turn, don't they?
I know.
On a lighter note, one bit of trivia I did find is a bit like Lion King. To get the right animation for the dinosaurs, they brought dinosaurs into the studio and animated them as they walked around. Yeah.
But did they like kind of reanimate them like Jurassic Park using frogs?
This was the inspiration for Jurassic Park. This is where they got the inspiration from.
Yeah, it's actually a true story. I didn't know Jurassic Park was a documentary.
They were trying to make this movie and it all went wrong.
Just keep filming.
Well, Spielberg worked on this film, didn't he? So maybe he did do that and then think, wait a minute.
This is now a conspiracy podcast all the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
They've got dinosaurs, man. Hollywood's got dinosaurs.
I did read that Spike, who is the only dinosaur that doesn't speak, he's brought in slightly later on in the film. Ducky discovers an egg about to hatch and this little Stegosaurus is born. And Spike was actually inspired by Don Bluth's pet dog, which was a chow chow called Cubby, which I thought was a cute bit of information. So I guess they probably did do a bit of observing animals to create the movements of the dinosaurs.
I wonder what animals they would have used.
Apart from dogs. Well, dinosaurs.
Yeah.
As Mike said.
Maybe a cat.
But, I mean, I think if you have kids, like, maybe let them watch it if you're okay with them crying. If you are a 30-year-old adult that has never seen this film before, I think maybe we take
Don't have kids.
Don't have kids, and maybe we take a leaf out of Joe's book and we don't revisit this movie.
Yeah.
But if you are filled with nostalgia, as Max and I am, then definitely give another watch. It's, why not? 69 minutes, you've got nothing to lose.
It's not how I felt. I'll tell you now. I feel like you owe me something.
Right, well, you can get your own back on us now, Joe, because I believe it is your turn to choose the next movie.
So here's the thing. I could get my own back on you, and there's loads of films that you know I could pick. There's no shortage of Bond films, you know that I would have watched as a child. I am going to pick a film that we've mentioned before, and it is different to the last few films we've had. It's probably the exact kind of film you'd think I'd pick. We are going to watch The Matrix.
Wow. Okay.
So there you go. I'm just curious. Sorry, Steph. Steph, have you seen The Matrix?
I have. I have actually seen The Matrix.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, no, because I know that it's mentioned before. I know we've mentioned it before on this podcast, but I can't remember whether it came up and someone said, oh, I've not watched that before. But yeah, Joe, I'll be honest. I'm just letting you know this now. So that was literally going to be my next choice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm really excited to see this film, obviously.
Oh, that's happened quite a few times where you've picked films that have gone, oh, that was on my list.
Yeah.
That's good then. Okay, I don't feel as bad. But, I mean, spoiler alert, I'm picking it. I like this film. It is one that as soon as it came out, I watched it and watched it and watched it. So hopefully you won't Land Before Time me. I don't know.
We'll see. I can't... I haven't...
We'll see.
Yeah. I haven't watched this film in a very long time. Probably only watched it once when it came out. So,
Oh, okay.
It does have Keanu Reeves in, though, so I'm happy to rewatch it.
Oh, that's okay, then. That's good. Yeah.
There's a lot to unpick in this film. Yeah. There is a lot to unpick in this film.
Are we going
to
get deep again?
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, like, from a film production point of view, but also the story itself, there's a lot to unravel in this film. So I'd be interested in your... I'd be lying if I said I hadn't watched this film recently. I definitely have.
Yeah, I think I've watched it this year. I'm still going to be...
Yeah, I'm 100% watched it this year. So, I'll happily watch this. I'll never get bored of this film. So, yeah, really excited, as always.
Lovely. Fantastic.
Amazing.
Really excited.
Right, well, see you next week then.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for sitting through it, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
We'll see how many people agree with you, Joe, when we release this episode.
Sorry, not sorry. Yeah.
You'll just get people not looking at you in the street and just be like, no, not talking to you again, Joe.
He's one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I'll see you guys next week.
All right,
see
then.
Next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
See you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the 90s Kids Movie Pod. If you like what you heard, then don't forget to subscribe. And if you really like what you heard, then why not leave us a review? You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 90s Kids Movie Pod and let us know which movies you grew up watching.